You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, you're going to love it. Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you had a great weekend. You watched Tiger King. Hopefully you listened to my last episode, which I thought was a doozy. Lots of behind the scenes info. This week, I've got a great episode. I got a chance to talk to Marlo Hampton from Real Housewives of Atlanta. Now, Marlo is sort of on and off the show. She sort of appears, disappears. And she's got this huge personality, and I've been dying to talk to her for a long time. And fortunately, I got a chance to this week. And I have to say, I thought that she would come on the show and have this like bold, brass personality. It turns out she's like actually really sweet. And I thought she had a really interesting life story and her connection to foster care is really quite interesting. So yeah, I was really surprised. She is quite sweet. And I think that sometimes, you know, you hit the right on the mark with these reality stars where if you saw them on the street, they're exactly as who they are. I think that Ramona Singer probably at a deli would be the same person she is on TV. But I got to say, Marlo Hampton, pretty sweet. So I'm excited for you to hear that. And then I had this incredible reading with Jonathan Mark. He is a 28-year-old guy from Long Island. And he reached out to me and we kind of struck up this really great friendship. So I thought it'd be kind of fun for him to watch a show called Who Do You Think You Are on TLC, which is where celebrities kind of track their genealogy. They've got this incredible staff of researchers that take someone's family history and do a deep dive like none other. And they get a chance to travel all over the world and kind of explore the villages that their relatives lived. And sometimes they even get to meet some of their relatives. So the episode that I had him watch featured Molly Shannon, who's one of my all-time heroes. And she had this very sad story that I didn't know too much about. She was in a car accident when she was, I think, about 4 years old with her family, and her mother and her little sister Katie died in the accident. And God, it's just heartbreaking. She started talking about it. And so it was kind of nice for her to go back to Ireland and to meet her relatives and for them to share stories about her and what they had heard, you know, from America about her new life. I always think, God, what wouldn't they find if they tracked my family down? You know, like you can do, actually, that's probably a great idea during this isolation. You can do a great search for your family on one of these like ancestry sites. Ancestry really is the best. If you want to do research and you want to find where relatives lived, look up their marriage records, juicy stuff, look there. If you want to find out if you were the product of a one-night stand, definitely do 23andMe. I have a friend who pursued information about her birth parents for years, and then 23andMe came in and like got all the info. So she found out finally who both of her birth parents are. And you know what? I have actually a crazy story in my family from 23andMe. I have a cousin that was placed for adoption years and years ago, and I met her when I was in college. And let's just say I encouraged her to do a 23andMe test, and the information that my relative shared was not in accordance to the results of the 23andMe test. So yeah, a lot of stuff going on there. I think I actually talk about it in my Patreon episode. You can go back and listen to it. But that's a great show to watch. Who do you think you are? And definitely call Jonathan. I did a reading with him and he connected with my friend from college and it was great. So great. One of the other things that I've been watching is, well, two things. One is a documentary on Netflix. It's called The Accountant of Auschwitz. So in 2015, 94-year-old former German SS officer Oskar Gröning, nicknamed the Accountant of Auschwitz, went on trial in his home country, charged with complicity in the murder of 300,000 Jews at Auschwitz in 1944. So his trial made headlines around the world as a frail old man took the stand to face his former victims. So it kind of poses this question as it goes through the history. Should somebody who's 94 years old stand trial? Should he go to prison? Should he be penalized for things that he did earlier in his life? And for one side, the argument is, well, he was born into this nationalist family and he was sort of brainwashed and he's had this exemplary life since then. While others who were obviously victims said, look at his body language. He has zero regrets and he has to be held accountable. So just an interesting documentary to watch. I highly recommend it. It's on Netflix. And the other thing is, I love a good sports documentary. I love a great sports documentary. So this one is called Don't Take Me Home. It's Amazon, the UK site, and you can rent it. It's called Don't Take Me Home Again. It's the story of the Welsh international football team's rise through the FIFA world rankings and onto their first international tournament for 58 years. So the accents, if people like my friend Catherine Miller from college, she is so weird about accents. And by the way, she's from New Jersey and has an S on the beginning and the end of every word. In college, she talked like this. So you think that's Weasley's Coast? But she refuses to watch a movie where there's an accent. She's like a real pain in the ass that way. Like, this would not be up her alley. If you can withstand the accents, which I can, because these are my home people. I mean, I may be born in America, but of course my parents are European. So watch Don't Take Me Home. It is a great sports story. It gives you that feeling of like, we can achieve success. You know, it's like the same feeling when I watched the documentary on HBO about the Americans, the women's soccer team who won. And when Brandi Chastain rips her shirt off, it's like that kind of feeling, like a Rudy. God, isn't that the greatest movie? Like one of those kind of stories. So again, Don't Take Me Home on Amazon, The Accountant of Auschwitz on Netflix. And in this episode, again, we're going to have Marlo Hampton from Real Housewives of Atlanta and medium Jonathan Mark. So here we go. Marlo Hampton is a huge star out of Real Housewives of Atlanta. I feel like we don't know much about her, so I was so excited to get a chance to talk to her. Marlo, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing? I'm so glad to be on the show.
Thank you. So tell me a little bit about you. I know that you are from St. Petersburg, Florida. So tell me a little bit about your life.
Marlo Hampton, about my life. Oh my gosh, kid, there's so much to tell. The main gist, just to summarize it, I was raised by my biological mother until age of 10 due to substance abuse and my mother's personal issues. I was in five different foster homes in Pinellas County, and that's how I ended up in St. Petersburg, Florida, because I was born in Clearwater. And from St. Petersburg, I went to college. I went to the University of South Florida. I graduated from there. I had my ups and downs. I'm in an amazing foster family, my fifth foster home. And that's my lovely grandmother who just passed a couple of weeks ago, Ari Holmes. And really, it's just as much as, you know, you can know from my upbringing until I moved to Atlanta. And now you have more love, you know, from Real Housewives of Atlanta to here.
And I know that you do quite a bit with foster family charities. What do you think has been the takeaway from that experience?
The takeaway from the experience, it comes natural to me, Kate. to be honest with you, it really does. Due to me being raised in five different foster homes, it's just my job. It's my duty to do it. It's something that I know well. I know how it feels not to feel loved. I know how it feels not to have a key to a home or not to feel like it's just, you know, you're truly loved. And it's just a place that you can call home. And now to this day at 44, home is really important to me. Like a place where you can call home, people who truly love you. It means a lot to me. So I couldn't do anything but give back to my girls in foster care, glam them up, let them know things that they would probably never have experienced if it wasn't for me.
Who were some of those people that during your childhood just really stood out as people that left an indelible impression?
Two for sure. And unfortunately, both have went on to heaven with God. My godmother, Mildred Green, I lost her last year. She's one of my best friend's mother. And she took me on as if I was family. When I was in my fourth foster home, I would walk back and forth home to school with her daughter, who I'm now best friends with. And she just was amazing. She was a person, it was like, hey, your door is open. My door is open for you all the time. If my best friend and I would get in an argument, we wouldn't talk, I could still go to that house and the door was open for me. So she really showed me the true definition of what love was. And another person, like I mentioned earlier, would be my grandmother, Ari Holmes, who was just as amazing. I mean, they both were Aquarius women, strong women, and they were just amazing. I mean, words cannot describe these two women. And not to even leave my biological mother out, I'm so much of her as well, but just due to the issues that she had, I have a lot of her insults in me, but I left that 10. So the women I looked up to, who I learned from, were those two women.
So you graduate from school. What was your dream? What had you kind of always wanted to pursue?
To be honest with you, I remember when I was in with my real mother, and I was in St. Petersburg. Well, no, this is when we lived in Safety Harbor. I just always remember growing up saying I wanted to be a talk show host or a news reporter. And I would play around with my friends and say, yes, and my name is Margo. I'm going to be a talk show host. So that's just what I always grew up saying I was going to be.
How did you end up in Atlanta and eventually into the world of Real Housewives of Atlanta?
Oh, how did that happen? As I mentioned earlier, you know, I grew up in foster care in St. Petersburg, Florida. So when I was in my fifth foster home, this is right before, when I first went into foster care, I was running with the wrong crowd, thinking I knew everything. You know, Kay, how like when you've had so much turmoil in your life, you're angry and I feel Kate and everyone owes me something, yeah. But you're just not going to understand and you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't been there. So I kind of had that attitude for a couple of years and it got me in trouble and it got me with the dating and loving the wrong guy. And I'm like, you know what? Get your life together. You know, like just sit down, look yourself in the mirror, stop making excuses. And it starts with the person in the mirror. So my girlfriend was here. Her name is Kia. Kia, K-I-A. She was going to Clark here. And she's like, Marlo, you should just move here. I'm like, oh, I just need to start over fresh, but I just don't know. And I was in a troubled relationship and I just really hit rock bottom. You know, you just like, damn it, I'm tired. I got to make a change. And I just did it. I came to Atlanta. I transferred from the department store that I was working at in Tampa. At the time I was working in Tampa, Kay, at a place called Harold Pinner. It was a men's store. So when I came to Atlanta, it was over like on the south side on Candler Road. And it reminded me so much of home because it was on Candler Road, the south side. I'm like, I want to get over to this place called Buckhead. Everyone keeps talking about it, and to Lenox Mall. Then when I got to Lenox Mall, I worked at a place called Arden B. Do you remember Arden B?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I started working at Arden B. I was in Buckhead. I would see all these beautiful girls come in, dress nice. I'm like, oh, I want my own store. So I started off bartending and waitressing. And I remember this day clear as no other. I went to FedEx Kinko's and I printed up some cards and said I was a stylist. Because I would always dress nice, no matter if it was from Kmart or the Goodwill, I just had a unique style. and people would always compliment it. So I just was like, hey, I'm going to sit on the stylist. I'm going to pass out cards. And I ended up getting styled for Jazzy Faye, Young Jock. This was like, you know, think about it, 10 years ago when they were booming with the music. So it was just, it took off. And then my girlfriend and I opened my own boutique over at Perimeter Mall. And I was at work one day at Perimeter Mall and the recruiter came in. As a matter of fact, the lady who came and recruited me, name was Princess. She came in and was like, are you Marlo? Everyone talks about you. So fashion forward. Da-da. And it just started from my boutique. And what's crazy, a lot of people don't know, Real Housewives of Atlanta taped at my boutique. Like I styled a couple of girls. Candy, Nene, they never showed that scene, but they actually filmed at my boutique. I want to say it was season 3. It was whenever like Candy first it came on. So it's just, and that's how I ended up here in ATL, Hot Atlanta.
And so of the cast, are you closest to Nene?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
What I'm the closest with. I've known her from day one. Like I said, they came up in my store and, you know, filmed there and we just connected then. I styled her back then for an event. And yeah, absolutely. We're the closest out of all the girls.
So you've never been totally full time. Is that because being a full time cast member would require you to totally open up your life? And I get this feeling that there's a part of you that would like to remain a little bit private still.
No, I don't know why you and a couple other people get that feeling. I'm an open book. I'm an Aquarius. What you see is what you get. With you, when you're on a reality TV show, you can't hide nothing, Kate. You can't hide anything. You have to live in your truth. So it's just what you see is what you get. I mean, I was offered a contract at one point. It didn't work out. Well, it's not even that it didn't work out for me. I wasn't ready for it. I thought it was too much. A Southern country little girl coming from St. Pete. I'm like, ooh, what is this? You know, it's just too much for me. And then as I watched the show and I, you know, learned more about it, I'm like, okay, let me try this. I was dating a guy by the name of Charles Grant at the time. And he was like, okay, let's give it a try. And I came on my first season with Charles Grant.
So what was it like to start filming? Did it feel like it seemed natural, or did it take you a while to get used to it? Because as you mentioned, being on a show, you totally have to open up your life. So that opens other people to making judgments about you or trying to pick away at your life, people that you've dated or decisions that you've made. Was that hard for you to come to terms with?
To be honest, at the time, I was like a kid in the candy store. It was fun. I was dating a new guy. I've always came on the Marlo that you see today. Now, my guards are just down. And since I've got my nephew, you see a more softer side of me.
Yeah.
You know, you see the munchy side now. Before, coming from the hood, coming from 5 different foster homes, coming from daddy issues, I was angry. I was mad. I was disappointed. So I was like, I'm going to hurt Kate before Kate hurts me, or you're not going to get to me.
Right.
So, no. Then it was just, what you see is what you get. I just went in thinking this is just going to be fun. And boy, did I not know. Ooh, okay, these girls can really be mean. They're going to go below the belt.
Have you ever felt a sense of connection at all to someone like Kenya, who's also struggled with issues of abandonment? Did it at first make you sort of connect with her, or do you think that's part of the reason maybe you butt heads? Is that
no? I think we butt heads because we're both Aquarius, and Kenya is very evil. You know how they always say hurt people hurt people.
Yeah.
So our story, you would think that we would have been super close because we definitely have a relatable background, but no matter what, we've tried the friend thing. She used me and, you know, betrayed me when Nene and I fell out and pretend to be my friend, but really wasn't. And Kenya is just someone I don't care to get to know. I don't wish her bad. I wish her nothing but the best. But she just has a lot going on herself. And the best thing for her would be just professional and Jesus, professional help and Jesus.
Jesus.
Yeah, she needs Jesus and professional help. I would definitely don't need to be her friend. I'm not the friend to help her. I can't help her. She's a little above my, you know, league.
So of the other women, who do you feel, who do you have a great friendship with on and off the show?
To be honest with you, this is my first season really getting to know all the girls and having a close relationship with all of them. Like, this is the first season. Portia and I really connected. Tanya is new on. She's such a freaking blast. You know that. Tanya is happy-go-lucky. Yeah. So I would have to say Nene, Portia, Candy. Like, you know, those are the top three for sure. And Tanya. And then it goes to Cynthia and Never Be Kenya.
Tell me something about each person that we would be surprised to know.
Nene is super sensitive and submissive. Greg is definitely the boss in that relationship.
Oh, okay.
Portia is a freaking... Portia is just good old Southern country girl. Just loves family and a good old time.
Okay.
Candy, she's really an amazing mom. As I got to know Candy this season, I actually was able to see her hands-on with Ace. And that really touched me. And with her daughter, I had an event at MCM. And just to actually really see her with her kids bond and play. And my nephews, we had a play date. And it was just amazing because you really don't get to see that. You get to see her talk about business, you know, being the provider. But actually to see her hug and kiss and touch, that was really amazing. So she's definitely a great mom in that aspect. Because I think she beats herself up a lot for not having time with the kids.
Yeah.
But when she's with the kids, it's just amazing to see that.
What about Eva?
Eva, something about Eva that you don't get to see. What she's really thinking, you don't get to see.
Awesome.
To me, Eva, she thinks before she reacts. And she's, you know, like me, it's just, boom, this is what she's getting, Kate.
Yeah.
Like, I need to probably think sometime, and I don't. Eva, it's a lot of Eva that you really don't get to see, I would say.
Tanya
is just fun. What you see, I would say also, is what you get with Tanya. Tanya is kind of like Marco. I mean, she's just fun. What you see is what you get, I would say, with her. Until you really, really, really piss her off and hear her swear.
Cynthia.
Cynthia is another one who I feel that definitely with Eva. You don't really see everything that she's thinking and how she feels. You don't get to hear it. Because Cynthia would get you also.
So this entire season, there's been a lot of fighting with Kenya. Obviously, she was going through a quite difficult separation.
Is
there anything that we didn't get to see at that charity event? And of course, the trip to Greece that you wish that that would have been included in footage.
What more do you need to see besides she's hurt, she's evil, she's mean, her divorce is awful. I mean, her divorce is not the best at all. And that's not one of my favorite people. So I probably wouldn't have too much good to say.
Did you look back at the episode with the charity event and have any regrets?
The only thing that upset me is our seating. I just thought that we were not sitting with other girls, I thought at first. And I didn't like that she was trying to sit us all the way in the back. I'm like, hey, Mike told me that he was co-hosting. He had already called me earlier to mentor my nephews. So I just wanted my nephews to take part of this event and see other men, the color of them doing amazing things. So I wanted them to get the full experience of this event.
So tell me a little bit about how your life has changed now that you have been basically the caretaker for your nephews. How have things changed for you?
Oh my God, how hasn't it changed for me? It's changed to where it's no more just about Marlo. It's about someone else. You know, usually I'm like, hey, let's pop up and go here, or let's do this. Or it's auntie, I'm hungry. Auntie, I'm sick. My stomach. Auntie, he hit me. I have a PTA meeting with the school. Or just the other day, I had to get on Zoom with one of the teachers and talk about his homeschool and William or Michael's homeschooling. So it's changed. Tremendously, but it's a good change. It's a change to where I never knew I was this strong. I never knew I was really this superwoman. How all the women, mothers, I admire you all now, because being a full-time auntie, it's no joke. So it's just a new respect I have for mothers, because so many mothers, you guys make it look so easy, and it's not easy. But I wouldn't change it for anything in the world, because I feel God has me where I'm supposed to be right now. And with the boys being here, it's shown more of a more affectionate side. I give more hugs and kisses now. They're so affectionate. I cry more. I find myself looking at them like, Lord, let these little boys grow up in the world that we're in today and just be amazing boys. And, you know, it's not about you anymore, to tell the truth. You have to sometimes stop yourself and say, hey, I need some me time or some self-care time.
Does that complicate your love life at all, having this awesome responsibility now?
Well, you know what? I need a love life first, Kate. So when I get a love life, we'll see. I'm single, and it may add a little more complication because I'm already a tough cookie, as you know, for dating anyway, with my standards. So now with two young men looking at me, my standards are super, super, duper high because I'm not bringing any man around my two young kings. He's going to really have to be a king.
So you say that a lot, that you have very high standards. What do you think is the most important thing for you to find in a partner?
Respect. Respect and trust. Those are my two things. You're going to have to, it's not what you do, Kate, it's how you do it. And you're going to have to respect me. I need to be able to trust you and vice versa. So those are just the main two things. And I want someone who I can literally be friends with. It's just with me being raised with my foster grandmother, Ari, my grandfather was a man. You hear me? He respected my grandmother. He was a provider. A man has to be a provider as well, I feel. He has to respect me. He has to love me, know how to talk to me. I'm a strong woman, and I'm really old-fashioned when it comes to dating. That's what's crazy. So nowadays, to me, the guys, they're worried about looking in the mirror, what they look like. They're not getting the car doors for you. Because our women just let them get away with anything. So I just feel it's not going to work for me.
But I would think that being on a TV show like that, it's so popular that there are a barrage of men that are angling their way into your periphery.
Oh, yeah,
they want to date
you. Oh, absolutely. As you post a swimsuit or something sexy they are, but that doesn't. That makes me, now other women are excited about it, that makes me more red flag, more cautious.
Yeah.
Because I'm on a TV show. I like when I go out and I'm hanging with Kate and she introduced me to her friend and they don't know that I'm on a TV show. I want you to like Marlo for me. So being on a TV show really is one of the downfalls in my dating or one of the reasons why I'm very cautious in dating.
Yeah. But so people have said that you dated Ted Turner. Is that true?
No, I addressed that on Wendy Williams, so they can look at that interview on there. I'm so over that. People
he's cute.
Have said a lot of things.
I wouldn't blame you. I think he's cute. Are you open to the idea of becoming a mother yourself?
I've always been open to the idea of becoming a mother myself, but that hasn't been what God has had for me. So I feel that if that's a part of my story, I will be. But until then, I would just remain my T. Marlo.
Well, what would you like people to know about the fostering system? The fact that you were a foster child makes your message all the more important.
What do I need people to know? That there's about millions of children out there that need foster homes to come to. So even if you don't become a foster parent, just getting involved with a foster child, helping a foster child, understanding that each and every one of us have a different background, a different story. And it's just patience. It's just, if you even are a foster home, one of the things that always bothered me was my fourth foster home. She had children before I came there and she had a daughter because her daughter, she didn't want her to be alone. And once I got there, her daughter felt that I was taking her mom away from her.
Mm.
So she told me I had to leave. And that's how I ended up being with her mother, which is my foster grandmother, Ari Holmes. So my big thing is let the child feel as if it's their home as well. I don't care if your child feels that they're taking their mom. If you know that you're doing a good job, you know that this child is not endangering your child. Let that child be raised as if it's your child. And don't become a foster parent if you can't treat that child as if it's your own.
Yeah. Okay, so are we filming the next season yet, or do you have a little bit of a break?
We're on break now. We haven't started yet. We haven't even filmed the reunion yet.
Are you excited for the reunion? Are you feeling a little anxious about it?
Oh, I'm super excited. Oh, I think this reunion is going to be epic.
I would think so. What's the one last thing that you want people to know about you?
I don't follow the crowd. And I want people to know it's kind of tough. And sometimes you'll walk alone when you just go by what you believe in and follow your dreams. And that requires sometimes of you walking along. And that's okay, because I'm around people I see every day who are not authentic. The world makes them someone else. Social media makes them someone else.
What are you doing outside of the show that you'd love everybody to know about?
Outside of the show, I'm huge with my nonprofit called Glam It Up, which works with young girls in foster care. If they go on my page, Marlo Hampton, they'll see we've been to WNBA games. We have huge events for Christmas, and we've been to Candytopia, and we go to five-star meals. I try and introduce these girls into things that I never was introduced into at their age. So I had a banker come and teach them what a credit score was. I had someone come from Neiman Marcus and do their bra size and how important undergarments are. Just that's one thing that's passionate, dear to my heart, my nonprofit, Glam It Up. So they can go on my Instagram, tomorrowhampton.com, click on Glam It Up. They can purchase a wig, which it's a new wig line called Her that I recently launched. They can go on there and purchase one of my glueless wigs. They're amazing, fun. They last up to a year. And just right on Instagram, they'll always be able to know what's all things Marlo.
Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
What is it like to watch a show like this where someone is tracing their family history?
It's actually very cool for me, only because like when I read people and I bring in like relatives that they've heard of and that they don't really have I guess proper information to kind of truly validate some of the stuff I have. It's cool to see like anyone, whether it's a celebrity or not, kind of go through what she went through by going to her like homeland, Ireland, to get all these facts about, you know, her family, just to see it actually happening, like really happening live in front of your face versus like me telling you.
So Molly Shannon headed to Ireland in search of her mother's unknown family tree. Her desperate ancestors were forced to choose between their faith and survival. There was a family legacy of bravery, and she got to meet her Irish cousins for the first time. What struck me most about this episode is that in the beginning of the episode, Molly talks about a tragedy that her family experienced as a child. She lost her mother and her younger sister, Katie, in a car accident. And so her father raised she and her sister on his own. I have to, like, it was so hard to watch that part and watch Molly cry and to realize this really funny actress has this really interesting backstory. I know that she was somebody that you weren't that familiar with before. What was it like to watch that scene play out?
Yeah, so like you said, I wasn't that familiar with her only because I think of my age. I think the thing that struck me the most is like, yes, people lose people in automobile accidents, you know, but she was involved in it. Like she witnessed it happen. She was in there and she went to the hospital from it. And like, that's what broke my heart is that she literally had to witness and go through the accident that her sister and mom did not make it out of.
And the nice thing about the episode is that once she went back to Ireland and she met all of these cousins, she learned stories about her mother. It was like she was keeping her mom's memory alive. One of the things that cracks me up about shows like this is I've watched so many of them. I feel like some of these celebrities go on the genealogy trail. So they do this episode and then they go to the Roots episode. But I feel like it's similar to ones about mediums. Like I'll see somebody on the Tyler Henry show and then I see them go to Teresa Caputo. Does it seem like that too? Like once you go to one TV medium that they all go to they hit all of them?
Yeah, it definitely seems that way. And a lot of my clients that, you know, are on TV or whatever, they all tell me they've seen Tyler, they've tried to see Teresa, or they've seen Teresa. So yeah, that is very true. It's very, very true, actually.
The other thing that cracks me up about the show is that I've watched enough episodes that some people have incredible experiences. Like Courtney Cox goes back to England and finds out that she's a relative of William the Conqueror. you've had like a cakewalk in this life.
Yeah.
And all your relatives are from British nobility. Okay, great.
Yeah,
and then you have somebody that will go back to their homeland and find out their parents or their, you know, their relatives were criminals. So you kind of get the short end of the stick sometimes. My father is convinced he's super Irish. Like he speaks with an Irish brogue, even though he grew up in Philadelphia. I think he would be devastated if I was on one of these shows to find out that maybe his family was from like Croatia. I mean, 23andMe has basically proven that we're Irish English, but I do feel like some people, that's part of their own narrative. Like I'm super Sicilian. Like imagine if Snooki went back and did her genealogy and found out that she was actually from like Ireland.
Like Spain.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, Spain or something. Yeah.
Australia.
Yeah, I think they would be heartbroken. I think their whole shtick would be gone at that point once it like leaked or came out. But yeah, I think they'd be heartbroken.
When you're kind of tapping into someone's relative that's passed away.
Yeah.
If somebody was a relative in the past, do they come back in another relationship?
I guess every energy, spirit, angel, whatever people call it, like people have crossed over, everyone is so different and they hold their personality like still. So if someone, let's say, passed away very young and they were very active and really wanted to come back, they typically will come back. So like what I tell people is when they come back, they stay within like a core 300 of like your life. Now, people seem to think that's a lot. But if you think about, like, I'm 28. So if you think about 300 people that I've came across with, like, that's nothing. Typically what happens is, like, if I'm using this example, my mom passed away, then I passed away. Like, I could be my mom's dad and she could be my daughter. Or I could be her mom and she could be my son. So typically, like, the energy, if they're very active and they're very, like, out there and they really want, they'll typically come back very quickly. But like other energies, typically, I would say mostly they like to wait for their core family to all cross over before they all go back together, like separately, like at the same time.
Oh, okay. So sometimes if you meet somebody and you get this familiar feeling, it's because they may have been like your uncle in a past life.
It would be someone that you're like close with. So it wouldn't be someone that you kind of like vibe with when, or like someone that you meet like once or a few times. And you're like, I really like this person and they have such great, like pure energy. It wouldn't be like that. It would be like someone who's typically involved in your life or had a major impact in your life.
Ah, okay. So you and I were not siblings in a past life.
I don't think so. We were definitely friends. We were definitely friends. But yeah, we were definitely friends. But like, yeah, a lot of people ask me because my mom's sister passed away like when I was about 4 months old. And she's still there because she's waiting for my mom because they were best friends like their entire lives, like best friends. So she's not leaving. And obviously, I can't read my own family as much because I know now so much about them from me reading my family and from hearing stories and stuff. But when I speak to people that, you know, that can read, that are, you know, out there that people know about, pretty much you get the same answer, but like in different ways. So like my aunt's waiting for my mom before they even decide to even do anything.
And do we plan our lives before we enter this life?
See, like that's interesting because when I read people and people that passed away very young or whatever you want to call it, like whatever young is to someone, it seems like when they passed away, it was kind of like they always say that they weren't meant to be here for long. So if they say that to me, that kind of indicates that it was maybe like
predestined.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they all like they'll say it in very different ways and in like different points. But the overarching message sometimes is like they weren't meant to be here for long. They're meant to be here in your life for X amount of time for this reasons. And then like and like that.
And when they come across, do they seem happy? Like, does anybody come back and they say, this place is a real shithole and I'm pissed?
like a shithole, like on the other side.
Yeah, like this place sucks. Like, I'm pissed I'm dead. It was so much more fun when I was alive.
It really, honestly, it really depends on the person. So I've had people to come through. I wouldn't say they were mad. They were mostly disappointed that they were there and they weren't on Earth, like, or physically here. But I haven't really had anyone come through like, God, this place sucks. Like, I need to get the I need to come back like ASAP. But I have had energies be very disappointed that they, you know, were there. A lot of these energies that come through like that are typically people that are murdered or or people that I've had people where they're walking on the street and a crane drops and kills them. Like, you know, like stuff like that, like where it wasn't their fault at all. And they should still be here. Like I have like those people when they come through are pretty like disappointed, but they're happy, like they're content, but they would rather be here with us.
All right. Well, it's crazy. It's obviously a very chaotic time. Everyone has a sense of panic and anxiety in the world right now. I know that you're doing a lot more readings because people feel very unsettled. What are the messages that you get from people's loved ones in relation to this pandemic? Is there an overarching message that you get?
That this is going to pass like quickly, but within this quick time, it's going to be a huge like bang is the word I want to use. Like it's going to be a huge bang. And with that being said is like, I said this before, like this week coming, like this week now and last week and next week halfway are going to be like the worst time. Like it's going to be the absolute worst time. And then you're going to see it slowly go back to like normal life after that, like slowly go back around like the end of April or early May. But what they keep saying is just basically that like that this is going to be over before we know it. But within this time, like basically stay within your four walls, like stay within like just kind of stay away from people. But it's going to be very big and impactful. It's going to hit us with a huge bang quickly, but then it's going to subside like slowly.
Do you get a sense that it's going to come back later or that it's just gone?
It's going to come back. Yeah, it's definitely going to come back, but it's going to be way more kind of like, you know, we're going to be ready for it and we're going to, it's not going to be how it is like this. So like when this virus comes back, it's going to be like you getting a flu shot for a different strain.
Got it.
That's what it's going to be like.
Is there a message also with that about the reason for it? Is there a reason for all of this?
What I have been noticing when I have been reading people on it is that I guess us as people needed to like kind of get reminded that the simple things is the best things for us, I guess. And I guess at a certain point, we all kind of got very greedy. And also too, I guess what I, you know, I had a dream about was they kept putting the earth around me saying like the earth needed a breather is what I kept saying, like hearing. And I'm assuming that like the pollution and stuff, I would have to imagine is getting a little bit better because we're all not doing anything. So that's what I'm assuming that they meant by that. But I kept hearing the earth needs a breather.
How can people reach you if they want to get a reading?
Yeah, so you go to my website. It's jonathanmark.net. A lot of my clients go to my Instagram for some reason, and that's Jonathan Mark Medium.
When you're doing readings, do you ever get a sense that people that come to you with questions about their relatives that they found out through a 23andMe test that they perhaps that they were because of a one night stand or they have, do you ever get a sense from people that you're reading that have pursued information on their ancestry and then through the process have come across information that was unexpected? Are those on the other side upset about it? Are they relieved that the truth is out?
Yeah, so it has happened. And I guess the best way to put it is when you pass away, I guess hindsight's 2020, so you reflect on everything. So no, they're not upset about it. It's more of a validating explanation for them. So it's another way for me to like really validate something that no one would know because I literally... I did this group reading And it was about 10 people, and they all claimed that they were extremely close friends, because I always start off by saying, like, you know, really personal things are going to come up quickly. Like, it's not going to be like, I need to build up. They come out very quickly. So if you don't want people to know, like, let me know, because I don't want to embarrass you, whatever. So I went to this one woman and I turned to her. And it's funny about Ireland, because I turned to her and I go, I'm so sorry, but it looks like your daughter was murdered in Ireland. And she's like, what? No. And I go, yeah, like, they're putting the Irish flag and your daughter's coming through saying she was murdered there. And she goes, no. And then she emails me like a couple months later saying that she was murdered in Ireland and they just found out.
Oh, God.
So like her daughter, but like, this was an ongoing case for about 5 years. So like, this wasn't like a recent thing. Like, I guess this was going on. And when she was saying no to me, she truly felt that her daughter was still alive. She just wasn't answering, or she wasn't like she started a whole new life and wanted to leave everything behind. And I guess the stuff that I validated with and was explaining about everything about that trip with her, because I spent a little bit more time with her than like the other people.
Yeah.
And she like reached out, and she like, you know, I'll never forget it, because this is like when I first started doing group readings and stuff. Like, I really was not a fan of them, and people kept requesting, so I did it, and that was one of my first ones, and it just stuck with me because she said no to me. And then a couple months later, I get this long email, long email, and she was saying, like, because of what you said, she basically, a lot of people with that stuff will take what I said and bring it back to the police, and then they use it to help them.
Oh,
sometimes.
Absolutely. But do you ever get somebody who didn't know that they didn't know their parents? And so
yes,
when they come across in a reading, just the parent that never got a chance to meet them, let's say their mother and father had a one night stand, are they aware of their child and of their child's life?
Absolutely. So I'll know whether it's a birth parent or like blood parent, or if it's some like someone that like raised you, that's a parental to you. So like, if you're mom had a one-night stand with someone and the dad was gone, and then the mom died very early, and then all of a sudden your grandma and grandpa raised you, like, I always pull in the biological parents to give them closure and to give them what they need to help them kind of take a step forward in life with it. Because a lot of them will know that their parents are not their birth parents once they reach a certain age, obviously. Because a lot of people that come to me are typically with like from like 20s on, and a lot of them will like won't say anything, and then I'll say to them, be like, I don't know if you ever met your dad, because your dad is kind of, you know, all over you in a sense that, like, you know, it doesn't seem like you met him, but you have a father figure that passed away though too, but that's not your blood. And then they kind of go, oh my God, yeah. And then we start talking, and then I start diving into the situation for them.
That must be such a relief to so many adoptees that never got a chance to meet their birth parents.
Yeah. And like sometimes people lose their parents very tragically young, and then they kind of go to an aunt or an uncle, but they never really had a true relationship. I mean, a good example is Molly, because Molly Shannon, because she lost her mom when she was 4. So she didn't really have that relationship that like most people have with their parents growing up, teenage years, 20s, getting married, having kids, all that. So when I bring in these people for them, like their actual parents, you can tell that they get extremely emotional, but it's like a weight lifted off of their shoulders. Like, they feel relieved, like they feel good. Yeah. And that's the best feeling for me.
How old were you when you realized you had this gift?
So when my aunt passed away when I was about 4 months old. So when I was about three or four, I just found out this story from my mom when I was getting like interviewed, which is like so weird, but I guess we were driving. And so basically I had this my entire life, but like we were driving and we were very silent. And I told my mom, I go, oh, Aunt Sue is saying, thank you for thinking of her right now. And my mom turned to me, she's like, how did you know I was thinking about her? And then like other stuff started happening that was like, my mom said the most like bizarre things. Like when I was like 6 or 7, at a family party, I walked up to my mom and I was like, Aunt Sue says, thank you for burying her in your jean jacket. She's really comfortable right now.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah. And then like stuff like that started to happen even more. But then I got really scared of it. So I stopped speaking about it because I got so scared. And I also realized that like what I'm seeing, feeling and all that, like not everyone else is. And as I got older, like, you know, kids are kids and teenagers are teenagers and they're not always very nice and accepting. So I tried to keep that on the down low and I just played sports and tried to live a normal life. But before I went off to school and I had preseason for my sport, I like couldn't hold it in anymore. It was just becoming more and more, I guess, stronger because I was seeing other people's families. I was seeing so much. And I asked my mom if there was mental illness because I feel like I'm schizophrenic. Like it got to that point. Like yeah, I thought sure. I was messed up. Like it was bad. So yeah, it took a while for me to accept who I am with this because I was, you know, scared and I didn't know how people would take it.
What's going to happen when you get married? How hard is it going to be for you to find somebody that understands how much this takes up of your life?
Which is surprising is like more people, I guess, are way more like understanding about it than I thought. Like I thought people were gonna females, like girlfriends, you know, I've had girlfriends when I, you know, kind of like, you know, told them when I wasn't out there doing this, you know, whatever that, you know, this is what I see. And they looked at me like I had 10 heads. And then like, you know, I caught one cheating because of me connecting to her grandfather.
What?
Yeah.
So what did the grandfather say?
It was weird. Like this has never happened. So like it happened then, but like it never happened before, but we were just laying in bed. And then all of a sudden the name Frankie just kept coming and, you know, and it was her grandpa and he was warning me about a Frankie, like a warning. So I turned to her and I go, "Who's Frankie?" And she looks at me and she turns white, like a ghost. Like, and immediately I'm like, oh shit, like this isn't good. Like, you know, I'm like,
oh my God.
And she goes, "That's my ex-boyfriend. And I saw him about a couple nights ago." Like she couldn't even deny it. Like, you know, she wasn't even going to try and lie about it.
Does that mean the grandfather wants her to be with Frankie or he likes you more than his granddaughter?
Not that he likes me more than his granddaughter. I guess he respected me to like let me know what was going on. Cause I wasn't doing anything to her. I was treating her very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think he just was like, you know, this isn't fair to this kid. Like, this is not fair. But then I had, you know, readings, you know, where I caught people doing that to their significant others. It happens a lot, you know, like, so.
Have you ever had it where you've met with a couple and you know that one person's cheating and then you're in a weird position because you know that if you bring it up, they might get divorced?
I have.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I definitely have. And I go about it in a very like
delicate way.
But yeah, like I'll do it in a way where like they admit it. Like, it's not me. Like I'll bring up little context clues and start saying like someone's name. And like, you could tell that they're getting like, you know, bothered. And then like, you know, and then I could tell later on because they'll come back to me like a year later and they're not with that person.
You need to work on the Real Housewives cast members because I feel like a lot of them are up to some shenanigans. Wow. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
I want to thank my great guests this episode, Marlo Hampton and Jonathan Mark. And remember, you can jump into the Facebook group and talk about this episode and other episodes. Just go to the search bar on Facebook and put in Reality Life with Kate Casey. Listen, what do you guys have else to do besides sit in your houses like the rest of us? So look for great TV shows, jump in our group and talk about what you are watching, ask people what to watch. There's just a great brain trust of people who love television just like you. You can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I will tweet during shows and about shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey, C-A. Jump on over, see what I'm doing with my kids to keep myself entertained. And I also will tell you what I'm watching during the week. I also have a Patreon page. So if you're looking for bonus episodes, extra episodes, jump in there. I think, what did I cover the other day? Lizzie Borden's murder. I mean, there's extra juicy stuff. So jump in there. And if you don't mind just writing me a 5-star review on iTunes, I so appreciate all of the reviews. And I'm wishing you guys a great week. I'm thinking about all of you. And I will circle back with you on Friday.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.